Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is October 23rd, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast is your home for top trending news and pop culture from all across Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Summer Lee.
And I'm Vim Shanmugam.
What's up, Vim?
What's up?
I'm doing well. We're surviving the week like everyone else.
You know, like every other week too, yeah.
I can't believe that like we're almost in November. Like this year... Yeah. I mean, it's been a write-off of the year, but even then, like, I feel like it's been quick-ish.
Yeah, time flies when you're indoors most of the time doing freaking nothing.
Yeah, I feel like it would have been, like, slower, you know? Like, wouldn't you have thought, like, I don't know, like, you were, like, stuck near home and stuff, but somehow, like, you know, I guess maybe time really does not wait for anyone.
Mm-hmm. And Halloween's coming up, but this time being really fast, that's the scariest part. Mm.
No treats, just tricks. That's what I would say.
Asshole of a year.
Well, we have a very interesting show. A little serious because we'll be checking in with our Bangkok team on the protests in Thailand. And a lot of like shenanigans happening in the news as well. So let's get into it. Advertise with our in-house agency, Grove. Fast, funny, digital. Join forces with us to slay buzzwords, rise above the noise, and sow the seeds of something great. Get in touch via coconuts.co/grove.
And our top stories for the week. We start off in Jakarta, where Naughty by Nature from KFC Indonesia offers healthier sides to its signature fried chicken. Wow. And yeah, I just got to do a voice for this next bit.
Are you trying to live a healthier lifestyle but can't give up your favorite juicy fried chicken?
Well, now you can have your deep fried chicken skin and eat it too, as KFC Indonesia has just opened a concept store that caters to your halfway healthy diet needs. I love it. Halfway healthy. Like, she's not a full convert. She's like halfway healthy.
Yeah, it's like only I half there. Like, I still party on weekends.
Mm-hmm. Variety is the spice of life. So, you know what? Do you. But yeah, the new concept is called KFC Naughty by Nature. And yeah, it's opened recently. So, located across Senopati's District 8, and the building looks more high-end compared to other KFC outlets. And yeah, it can definitely compete with like the other restaurants in the vicinity as well in terms of architectural aesthetics. And yeah, just one glance, it kind of looks like the house from Parasite, but whatever.
Yeah. For people who don't know, it has like a very like modern, like industrial kind of look, like modern minimalist.
She's all about steel and yeah, brushed cement. It looks like she's like contempo moderne, I would say. But yeah, according to the fast food joint, this is the first and only Naughty by Nature restaurant in the country. But yeah, they're picking up on the healthy eating fad. And yeah, they offer a healthier way to consume the fast food chain's signature fried chicken. So you can sub your usual white rice and fries for like other healthy options, you know, like kale Caesar salad, goma garlic greens or coleslaw. Mm. Or like stuff that's like, there's like crispy Brussels sprouts. I don't know how I feel about that. That's definitely controversial. Ooh. And yeah, there's like baked butternut squash and roasted baby potato. But yeah, Brussels sprouts. Who out here is eating fried chicken with Brussels sprouts? Do you want joy in your life or not?
Well, I always find it funny when like fast food restaurants have these healthier options, and all power to them. You know, obviously they're trying to make things a little bit more, you know, so that we don't hate ourselves as much. But if you're going to be eating fried chicken, like just eat fried chicken, man. Just eat it. Yeah. Eat your mashed potatoes. Eat your macaroni and cheese. Mm. Eat like, you know, your bread and rice, whatever you need to eat with it, because that meal's down the drain. As many Brussels sprouts or kale Caesar salads you're gonna eat, like it's not doing anything, I feel.
Yeah, repent tomorrow. You know, sin today, repent tomorrow. That's my mantra anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no one else cries after their meals. I cry all the time.
Mood.
Well, moving from Jakarta to Hong Kong, we have an interesting story where unfortunately the Chinese state media has blasted climate activist Greta Thunberg for backing the release of 12 detainees. So to give people some context, there were 12 protesters, Hong Kong protesters, that were detained in the mainland. And Joshua Huang, who was the protest leader, basically nominated Greta Thunberg to raise awareness to the situation, which Greta did. And unfortunately, also meant that the Chinese state were not very happy with our favorite global climate advocate. So yeah, she came out and, you know, supported the 12 detainees who are basically being kept in China without proper lawyers, proper access to the legal system. I mean, obviously China says that they're well represented and, you know, and they're being kept here because of, you know, like serious crimes. They've actually been in Shenzhen for 60 days already. So, yeah, it's an ongoing situation. And the Chinese media actually call Thunberg a clown eager to play to the gallery while also labeling Joshua Wong a secessionist. So a lot of drama. They say that Thunberg is an activist who is in collusion with Joshua Wong as well. So yeah, kind of an unhappy situation, to say the least, and Greta being called out. But I do think that it does raise a little bit more awareness because, you know, she is, as everyone knows, a very public person around the world. And hopefully there's some resolution to the whole situation because, yeah, it's gone on for almost like 2.5 months. So,
Yo, Greta, our girl Greta just like can't get a break. Like she's just been insulted left and right by people. Even in Singapore, she's obviously been trashed by Xia Shuai for no freaking reason, as usual. And now this, she's just supposed to go outside and play, but she can't because the world's on fire.
My gosh, yeah, and dealing with all these, like, clowns. I mean, they are the true clowns, not her, so.
Oh, y'all big adults. Stop bullying a child.
Yeah, like, I'm like, that's got to be some point, right? Like, we're like, it's a kid. Calm down.
And this kid has more sense than you. Let's just say that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, just to switch gears a bit, we go over to Bali, where the Kite Order Task Force reels in a huge kite flying over Ngurah Rai Airport. But yeah, kite season may technically be over in Bali, but kite-related violations are certainly not, as local authorities had to pull down a huge kite near Ngurah Rai International Airport. But yeah, according to Tribune, around 10 officers comprising the Indonesian military as well as the airport police and security, who are part of a kite order task force, undertook the task, as there were concerns that the kite might disrupt flight traffic, you know, the same way, you know, drones can't be set loose near airports. The kite in question was painted to look like an owl and predominantly colored with green and red, was about 6 feet tall. That sounds real threatening, but I don't know about you.
But it's, yeah, it's funny that they have like a kite task force, task force for this.
Yeah, I love that there's a dedicated one. Do you have another section for drones? Do you have another one for flyaway tablecloths? I need to know.
I can just hear, you know, like one of the cops, like calling one of the people in the task force, calling someone and being like, I have a particular set of skills that I've acquired over a long career.
Yeah. And how does it go? Like, oh shit, there's a giant Peppa Pig one coming in now. Ah, let's go team.
Yeah. It's like, what do you do? Like you go like, race out and try to find people. It's like Bad Boys. Let's go after like little kids who are flying kites.
Yeah, man. Like y'all, just, when y'all hear the alarm, which I assume y'all have, then y'all just run down the fireman pole, which I also assume y'all have, and just go get the damn kite. Good on you. I want a kite force, kite task force. Yeah.
Too funny. Well, moving from Bali to Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. An Islamist party member says he follows OnlyFans because of fitness trainers, but Malaysians are not buying it. So to give people some context, OnlyFans is a platform where I think people you can subscribe to personalized and I guess like special content from different types of personalities, and largely the personalities tend to be of the adult variety, to put it kindly, or there's always like provocative content or controversial content, but it's only like a subscription-based platform. A member of the Malaysian Islamic Party, or PAS, defended himself because he was following OnlyFans on Twitter. So he says that he wasn't on the OnlyFans platform. He was in subscribe to any of them. His name, Hezri Yassin, said that he was following OnlyFans because he was following a couple personal trainers that he liked, one being called Lori, the other one being called Anna. But Malaysians took to Twitter saying that BS, you could go on YouTube and find free fitness videos. So even though he says that he isn't on a OnlyFans subscription, there's no true way of finding that out unless like OnlyFans like spill the beans. So it's been taken by the social media sphere to be quite controversial. Some of the comments made were, why would you subscribe to OnlyFans to watch fitness trainers when you can see masculine men do the same thing on YouTube for free? I demand an explanation. there is a lot of NSFW content on OnlyFans. So, it's been an interesting thing. And in fact, his political rival, Shafiq Hasim from the Democratic Action Party, said that, I hope you stop lecturing on Twitter about religion and modesty and all that jazz. We all know what OnlyFans is famous for, and those subscriptions ain't cheap either. Best to put your US dollars to good use for the PAS Youth Fund. Boom. Them be fighting words.
But so, you know what? If you want to support sex workers, do it. And you know what? Be about it. It's okay to say I was watching porn. That's totally fine, sir.
yeah, that's the thing, right? So it's he's an equal opportunity subscriber, shall we say.
Yay. Thanks for regulating the economy. But yeah, over in Manila, some gross ass news. Because Super Tekla's girlfriend calls out the comedian for allegedly harassing her to have sex. That screwed up. A woman named Michelle Law Banang appeared in a television program to complain about her boyfriend, the comedian Super Tekla, whom she alleged harasses her for sex. She said in an interview with talk show Raffi Tofo in Action that Tekla Romeo Labrada in real life refuses to support their family because she sometimes doesn't want to have sex with him. Oh my god. Yeah, so she says, I feel sick. Every afternoon I have a fever. I get sick, I have a headache, but he doesn't understand that. He doesn't want to respect me, and he told me to get injectable contraceptives because he couldn't stop himself.
Oh my gosh. That's horrible.
Yeah, so like, I'm just going to go on record and say, that's fucked up. Anyway, so she goes on to say, he would curse at me. Sometimes he ignores me. He won't buy food for us, even if my nephews are there. Sometimes I would beg him to buy food and he would say, why? You didn't want to have sex. What? Oh my God, this dude is just trash.
Oh, yeah, but he looks a little shady as well.
I don't know, man. But yeah, the program showed a video taken by Banak where she is seen arguing with Tekla, whom she accused of masturbating right next to their child as well. Tekla curses at his girlfriend, whom he accused of refusing to sleep with him. Holy freaking shit.
Yeah, it goes on to say, like, she was holding the baby, right? And then he was, like, doing the deed next to her.
That's very messed up. And I'm very sorry for her. Like, this, I don't know, there's this thing where, you know, we assume that, they're in a relationship, so it's consensual as well. But no! That's not it. Their boundaries, you know. It's just sad to continuously see these things happening.
Yeah, and I think like it's one of those things where once again there's another like celebrity or someone in a prominent role or position that, you know, is doing this, you know, and I think it just falls down to people being in power taking advantage of women who might not be. And yeah, it's just another gross, disgusting example of it, and I hope that you know, that the cops are watching, listening, and that she gets the help that she needs, because this ain't good. Well, I guess on the same token, unfortunately, we're in Singapore, where a college professor linked to a student sexuality awareness group behind a recently canceled BDSM talk has been fired by the National University of Singapore after two undergraduates complained of sexual misconduct. A man by the name of Jeremy Fernando was fired from university's Tembusu College weeks ago with allegations that he made sexual advances towards two students. Yeah. The internal investigation found that he behaved inappropriately. And he's actually like a doctor who has been teaching and, you know, writing books and all kinds of stuff, like at the Simbusu College for NUS. But after obviously this review, he has been sacked. Last month we spoke about the event this was all about. So the BDSM event, this thing called Rope Bondage Zoom Sharing Discussion, was planned by the Timbuktu College as part of the student group T Freedom, and it was canceled because it drew about like 10,000 signatures saying that, you know, it was like, and it's about like hurting women and people, and yeah, it was like wrong. But yeah, so he has been sacked, unfortunately. One of the victims claimed that Fernando sent her many gifts and asked for sexual favors. And all I can say is like, we're back here again, you know, like what's happening? Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's also real sad because like this BDSM event, right? There's still nothing wrong with it, by the way. Like, I mean, the main point is consent, but obviously that's been taken the wrong way by the entire, I guess, the entire Singapore population. But yeah, the fact that he's linked with it is very unfortunate for BDSM, for that, for NUS. And yeah, I guess there's also the problem where, you know, we keep saying, ooh, NUS is just producing all these people. But then this problem is not really kind of exclusive to NUS. It's, I don't know, it's a national problem. It is absolutely sad that a lot of cases are coming out of NUS. And yeah, it just shows that they're not doing anything internally. At least that is my opinion. There was like a whole ass 15 days where I think NUS reported him to the police.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did. So, sorry, 15 days between the day he was sacked and before they made the police report. So, like, I think that was after national outcry as well. So that's fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, you know, BDSM with consent, to each his own. That's, you know, I know people like to say it's like a fetish, it's, you know, it's an orientation as well, you know, that some people enjoy it, that's fine. I am afraid to go to a dentist, so I could never be one of those people.
I guess the problem is that, you know, BDSM, it inherently comes with consent, but the main assumption is that it doesn't. So you know, the fact that this giant asshole is now linked to it is real sad. It's real sad for T Freedom, the organizers of the event. And yeah, this piece of shit. What the hell, man?
I think like having, obviously, like just to expand on, T Freedom also hosts a lot of gatherings for the LGBTQIA communities to give them like a safe space to express themselves. So I think, once, you know, there is a negative aspect of anything, you know, whether it's just a remote relation or like something that's like kind of connected in some way. All of a sudden people love to generalize and just, you know, try to cancel, quote unquote, cancel people. So like, I think, this is not cool. This is, really unfortunate. And I do hope that, you know, the women that were, well, they didn't actually say that they were women, but like the victims got their, you know, to get the help that he need, and you know, they're able to sort of continue on. And also like for T Freedom, you know, they're trying to, you know, do the good fight, try to obviously like, you know, have more awareness to alternative, should we say, lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully this doesn't stop them or even I guess like put a bad a dark cloud on what they're trying to do. So let's hope that everyone involved gets to do what they need to do from here.
And we definitely have to address the elephant in the room, and that would be the protests happening in Bangkok for the past few days. But yeah, so four Thai news agencies were ordered to be shut down by the government, and this includes The Reporters, Pratathai, The Standard, and Voice TV, as well as the student activist group Free Youth, for violating the new state of emergency. But yeah, that's also the reason many Thai people have flocked to the Telegram, the chat messaging app, instead of the usual Line app. And yeah, the main reason for this is that on Telegram, the messages are encrypted. I actually joined the Free Youth Telegram channel just to see what's up. Everything's in Thai, but it's fine. Google Translate works. But yeah, so you can see the number of subscribers in the chat. And right now there's like 11,000 people. But you can't actually click through to see who is in the group or who started the group, which is real nice. Love to see it. So yeah, Telegram's not just good for, you know, custom stickers that you can make on Photoshop, which I derive a lot of joy from. But yeah, now it's, you know, used in protests and organizing. And yeah, somewhere out there in some media student's thesis is, does the use of technology contribute to democracy? Yes or no? Discuss. And yeah, love to see it. Love to see it. Do you? I love Telegram. It's my favorite app. And yeah, we find out a little more about the protest from our Bangkok editorial team. We talked to Todd and Chayanit Itipongmeti, also known as Milk, who has actually been on the ground for the past few days. She even got injured a little bit, but she's totally fine. But yeah. So we check in with our reporters from Coconuts Bangkok on what's happening with the protests. And yeah, so we talked to Chayanit Itipongmeti first, who has kind of been reporting from the ground for the past few days. So Milk,
yep.
What on earth is happening? And yeah, could you walk us through why these protests are happening? And yeah, what's been going on the past few days?
Actually, it has to go back like since earlier this year. Like there was some series of protests going on, like hosted by mostly like university students, and it then like spread it across the nation. But then as you know, that COVID, the pandemic came, and we were under lockdowns for like months, and then when the lockdown measures were lifted, so right now the movement it came back. So the past few days, actually, like it has been happening since, if I'm correct, it would be like July, August, and it's been getting bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, but the series of protests, like 6-day period, it happened last week on October 14th. Mm-hmm. So yeah, since then until like, let's say like until yesterday, it's been happening almost everywhere.
I see. And how did it start? Like, what are you protesting for?
So that's a little tricky, but the main three demands, the group, the Free Youth group, they said they wanted the resignation of the our Prime Minister, Jan Usha. And then the second one was like the passage of amendment bills,
mm-hmm.
for like the brand new charter. And the last one right now, what they're like calling for, although they could be a divide among people, is the reforms of the monarchy.
But yeah, Milk, so where have these protests been mainly happening?
Since last week, it first like happened at the Democracy Monument, because it was the anniversary of the 1973 massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Todd, but yeah, so that one, and then afterwards they took places like Ratchaburi intersection, where the Central World and shopping malls are. And then again, it was like a different location, Butuan intersection. And then Wednesday, October 21st, was at Victory Monument.
Okay, what is the significance of like the BTS stations closing?
I think it was Friday when like BTS, not only BTS actually, but like MRT and also Airport Rail Link. There were specific dates that like they announced closures of all stations. And then I think it was like Sunday or Monday, it was just like partially closed.
Is this a reaction to, you know, them kind of preparing for maybe violence, or is that just, you know, government's orders?
There was one statement that issued, and it says that it has to close due to government's order. I mean, under even the state of emergency decree, that it has to close themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can I jump in with just one thing?
Yes,
some context. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The BTS, the SkyTrain system, it's been around for 20 years now. And it really is, it's not transportation for the masses. You know, most of the people are taking the 8-baht buses around town. The BTS really is a symbol of the middle class. It's middle class mobility getting around Bangkok. There's stations everywhere. So it has been sort of adopted as this conduit for these protests to take the Hong Kong Be Water model and be able to shift, adjust, and make last minute sort of plans based upon what's going on. So you'll have, we've had in the past couple of days, these announcements from the protest organizers saying, hey, everyone, get to any BTS station at this time and kind of stand by. And then, you know, just before the planned rally, they'll say, okay, go to this station, or everyone just do this. The other day, it was just everyone sang the national anthem at 6 p.m. and then issued a note of defiance that feudalism would die and the people would rise.
Just to
sort of protest distributed throughout the city. So it's kept the security forces on their feet, and it's enabled the protesters to outfox them. At the same time, this heavy-handed response by shutting down the entire rail system, I don't think people are blaming the protesters for that.
Yeah, and just, you know, about the protests at the BTS stations. So everybody's doing this three-finger salute. So could you tell us what that's about?
Well, Thailand co-ops a lot of pop culture. And of course, the three-finger salute began with the Hunger Games, Katniss Everson, and a symbol of defiance against the state. You know, in the same way that there was an early rally, there was a Harry Potter rally where everyone got dressed up like Harry Potter characters to protest the one who can't be named. The LGBT movement had a rally where it was very awash in sort of pop culture references to gay culture. So, you know, you see these things brought up, and there's other examples I can't, that don't spring to mind, but where, you know, the mass media culture is very vital to the messaging.
And yeah, speaking of people who can't be named, it seems that Thai people are getting extremely creative with, like, kind of talking about certain things, and many code words have kind of been formed here. So could you tell us, what is the CIA's involvement?
CIA's involvement. Yeah, so it's because, like, the protest could be intense, and so people try to be more creative by, I don't know, creating more memes, invent some humors into the protest as well.
CIA is reference to the vendors, isn't it?
Right, that, yeah. So do you want to tell us?
The thing everyone's been saying is, if you want to know where the police should just follow and typically women with a Mu Ping cart or Luke Chen selling little meatballs, they seem to be the most plugged in. They arrive before any protesters do. You get to the site and there's like 20 carts already lined up, ready to serve. Because in the pandemic, it's, you know, these people have not been making sales, and suddenly they're selling out of everything they've got.
Yeah. And the people got to eat. They get hungry when the protests tire them out. Todd, you've been covering these protests since 2010. So could you tell us what's different about this protest this time?
Yeah, well, this is a cycle that Thailand has been stuck in since the monarchy was nominally overthrown in 1932 and it became a constitutional monarchy. There's been an average of a military coup every 7 years. And so there's a cycle of authoritarianism, uprising, and then usually bloodshed on the behalf of the state. And then that leading to the downfall of these dictatorial regimes. So we're back, you know, the wheel has come around. We're back with military in power. The Prime Minister Prayut, who Milk referenced, one of the demands is he resign. He seized power 6 years ago and hasn't really left, even though he was sort of elected last year. And like Milk said, these protests really came back. There was an election. There was a hope that that would lead to the power of the people being restored. But the whole thing through the constitution that the military wrote kind of ended up being a disappointment. And the one political party that offered a ray of hope was disbanded. So that's what really pissed people off and made them take to the streets again. So this cycle has never really been broken. But for the first time, you know, had you told me a year ago that we would be writing stories about calls for the reform of the monarchy, that we would be able to even openly answer this question and discuss that the monarchy of Thailand has wide swaths of the populations, most of the young, calling for it to be reformed, calling not for it to be abolished, but for it to return to what it was under the law, which is a constitutional monarchy. So that has been, it's like difficult to overstate the power of that taboo that for generations is a topic that's really not spoken of publicly and is had even become worse over the years, worse in the sense that people were reluctant to speak about it, vanished overnight. As soon as people spoke out against the monarchy and the authorities responded by threatening them, well, then suddenly it was an open topic. Suddenly it's in the media. Again, like that's really pivoted the whole narrative of this. And the protesters, yeah, they insist they don't want to abolish it, but they haven't backed down. And the displays of anger being expressed in the street toward the monarchy are pretty shocking to a lot of Thais, especially an older generation who, for their whole lives, this was an institution to be revered and not questioned. So that's, you know, that's a very powerful point of inflection that's going on.
Yeah, it seems like the youth kind of are rising up. Would you say that they kind of have more bargaining power right now as compared to previous protests?
By previous protests, I would say there's like, they really, this time it's really different because they are a new generation who mainly communicate through social media, right? Mm. So everything's like, it's like social media movement. I don't know, but I don't know if you noticed, but like over the weekend, they kind of shifted from LINE and Facebook Messenger to Telegram. Mm. Yeah, it's like a new app for Thais. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's very popular here in Singapore. Like personally, I use it more than WhatsApp. So could you tell us why we're moving to Telegram instead of, you know, LINE or Facebook?
The Thai government is trying to shut down Telegram, right? Because they've moved moved to Telegram.
Yeah, no, you're right. They try to shut down everything.
I see. Yeah. And yeah, could you tell us why Telegram? Like, what is so special about it that the government can't touch? Or has this been tried before?
I don't know. Actually, I think they just tried to move around on social media platforms. Because like after Telegram, right now, there's like also some people also use another messaging app called Signal.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I think they just want to, they can move around like that and like create new communities or,
I see. I'm trying to figure out, you know, like the bargaining power of each party. And it seems that we also reported that the severe state of emergency was lifted over Bangkok. So do you think, you know, this is them sort of backing down or them starting to back down?
I don't really think so, because after last Friday, October 16th, I think people are more from what riot police done to protesters, like by shooting water cannons. We think it is laced with tear gas or whatever, but that means more protesters are rage, they are angry, they want to fight back. And this is the same even way
in the same way that in the past the previous regime's been brought down by their own violence, right? In the 1970s, 73, 76, you have soldiers and paramilitaries opening fire on students. Well, it turns out, you know, the public doesn't like to see their children killed. So that tends to end the authoritarian streak. So it's interesting. You have, like, last night, you almost have both sides trying to outdo each other on being reasonable and non-aggressive. You have mm-hmm. protesters creating human lines to keep angry elements away from the cops. You have the cops pleading and even withdrawing from positions, because that's really the battle for the public opinion here is whoever loses their shit and opens fire or gets violent first loses.
Mm. So have there been any promises to kind of stop with the water cannons allegedly laced with tear gas?
I think that went over so poorly that you know, they had a plenty of opportunity last night to roll them out. They didn't. I don't know what the orders are and the rationale, but Prayut, the prime minister, in his speech specifically referenced last night that, you know, we don't want to get the country to where it should go through water cannons. Mm. Just as he said, oh, we don't want to get through, you know, what the protesters are doing either. He was both weighing it. But again, like the military has been in charge for 6 years, and I'm sure some of them have had itchy fingers, but they have refrained from going around shooting people for those 6 years. And whether that's discipline, I don't know, but it's certainly out of an interest of self-preservation of their power. Cause again, they know that they let off some steam gunning down some protesters. It's game over for them.
Mm. Damn, there's some hard stuff. I don't really know what to say, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
But yeah. Oh yes. I absolutely want to talk about the big surprise mm-hmm. on Tuesday. Was that Tuesday? Let me check.
Tuesday, yes. Actually, that day it ended up that the big surprise wasn't, what was that? There was no protest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
it was provocation. Look, they got they got everyone wondering what's the surprise, what's the surprise. You've got the security forces wondering what's the surprise, what's the surprise, and the whole thing turns out to be a fake out. and certainly, you know, got the government spinning its wheels for nothing. So I think that was strategically, that was probably the point. But yeah, in the media now, the next time they keep teasing surprises, we're not going to be so excited next time.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I was just sitting here and yeah, just as, you know, a tourist of Bangkok, I know that the national anthem is played like at 6 p.m. at all BTS stations. And yeah, when you guys said there was going to be a surprise at 6 p.m., I'm like, what, did you hijack the system and you're going to play Beyonce? Like, that was my first thought, just because I don't know what's going on. But yeah.
That's fun. That would be fun.
Yeah, man, please do it.
Yeah, we sat around in our Slack chat, like, guessing, what's it going to be? Are they going to... They're going to announce that Somtam is made from people. Are they going to, declare a citywide dance party? I mean, we were just coming up with everything we could think of, but we should have guessed the obvious, which is that it would be, well, we did know it'd be anticlimactic, but not that anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm. And I saw your tweet about Ovaltine. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, the drink Ovaltine. Yeah.
Do it.
I didn't know that message, that reference to that might be too old for people.
What was the context of the Ovaltine?
It's an old movie. It's called A Christmas Story, and this kid throughout the whole movie, it's a period movie from like the 50s. He's trying to use his decoder ring to get the secret message, and at the end of the movie he finally gets the last piece and he decodes it expecting it's going to be something amazing, and it's just drink Ovaltine.
Oh my god, that would have been awesome.
Gosh. I do not remember that. That's hilarious. And I've watched Christmas Story like multiple times. That's so funny. Ralphie! So.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
But yeah, I guess just the final question. Where do we see this going, or how do you think it will end?
That's actually the question we try to answer, right, Todd?
Look, Wednesday night's big march on the Government House ended with this photo op. Two protesters side shoulder to shoulder with the police as they handed over this giant letter to the prime minister, which was basically they had written his resignation letter for him. It was like, "Hai Prayut Chan-o-cha, thief of the nation who stole the power, da 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 da." Hereby, and they that was Wednesday night. They gave him 3 days to sign it, and if he doesn't, which he won't, then protests will resume.
Oof. Do we think he'll sign it? Any guesses? Can we not guess? Are we going to go to jail?
Yeah. She's thinking real hard about it.
Okay, we can leave it at that. But yeah, thank you guys so much for your opinions, your thoughts. And yeah, we'll look forward to more of your reporting.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you, guys. Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys. Well, Summer, that was a really interesting chat with Todd and Milk. Really intense times in Thailand. Hopefully, you know, there's a resolution to everything that, you know, the Thai people can be happy about. But also, hopefully everyone stays safe and there's no more, you know, violence or anyone getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. My favorite bit has to be like the Thai innovation, like how they, you know, trying to not speak ill of the government or the monarchy, you know, because les majest loth. But also, yeah, it's just Thai innovation. Love to see it.
Yeah, just interesting. But like, yeah, as you know, people should know by now, like, you know, there are a lot of sort of ways to offend the government and the monarchy. So it's very tricky to sort of be in the straight and narrow, but yeah, hopefully all the protesters, you know, get what they need to get, and you know, there is a compromise made, and everyone gets out of it okay.
Yay, democracy!
Yay! And well, that's it for this week. A lot of I think this episode was a little bit heavier than normal, with all the stories, but you know, we'll be back next week, and hopefully, things are better in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support Coconuts and our weird and wondrous stories, you can become a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership. Make a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron, or buy our fresh merch at the Coconut Shop at shop.coconuts.co. Subscribe to our podcast and leave reviews. Tell us how you feel and what you like and don't like. We're excited to hear from you.
The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in 8 cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Summer Lee and Vim Shanmugam. Our executive producer is Byron Perry. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez. And our editor is Brina Lim.